It is Saturday, December 23rd, 2007, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, geek gifts, and of course, Week in Geek News. And in the second half, your questions and comments of technology. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. That means that no one wants to take responsibility for what we say for the next hour. And what we're going to be saying in the next hour, first, the geek news. We're going to talk about some geeky gifts. If you're doing last-minute shopping like everyone is, and you got a geek on your list, this is what you can do. Listen to this show and go out and buy everything we say, and you'll set yourself back a pretty penny, I can tell you. The phone numbers in the second half to ask us questions or give us comments. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can, of course, send us email. We do that thing. Go to geekspeak.org. And you'll figure it out from there. I'll give it that contact information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Cruise Out. It's also supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the Arum with me, I have geeks. Miles Elam, geek student of all, master of none. Is that right?
Yeah. Thanks, Lyle.
Sure. Hey, you know, I'm here for you, man. We also have Sean Cleveland, senior technical marketing manager at NVIDIA. Sean.
Good morning.
And now you guys have teased me about this other Sean's last name. We also have, let's see if I can get it, Sean Pelletier.
Oh, excellent. Nicely done.
Oh, my gosh. That's great. Technical marketing analyst at NVIDIA. And Sean, you both worked together at NVIDIA.
Yes.
So we have Miles, Slacker student, Sean from NVIDIA, and Sean from NVIDIA. I'm Lyle Troxell. We'll be taking your calls in the second half. But first, let's go ahead and start with some geek news of the week. Are we doing geek news this week? Do you guys have news? I know you've got a lot of gift ideas. But
yeah.
News. All right. Good.
Got them.
Go for it, Miles.
Go for it.
There's a new battery out based upon a new lithium ion technology with silicon nanotubes, and what they're looking at is up to 10 times the capacity of existing batteries.
I like.
Which would translate to be, just to give you a real-world estimate, a 20-hour laptop battery.
Wow. Is this in production or is this in theoretical?
No, this is theoretical. This is in the lab. This is not anywhere near actual production. So we'll see, you know, in 10 years, 15 years.
And this would basically be a better lithium-ion battery, so it's going to be the same voltages as lithium.
Right, it would still be a chemical battery. Mm-hmm. It would still be the same type that we're used to, probably the same formats fitting
same,
into the laptop.
Same voltage sizes and all that.
Although it would leave the door open for subcompact notebooks that last a long time, too, that you can make the battery much smaller while still having the same amount of charge.
Yeah, that's good. Or maybe even some laptops having better performance. That's what I'd like. Let's rev that hard drive up a little bit.
So have the battery still last only 2 to 3 hours.
That's right.
But have a desktop power to it.
That's what I want. Forget these 5400 RPM drives. I don't want them anymore. Thank you, Miles, for that update on new battery technology. You know, batteries, especially like the ones that we're all very common with, the most expensive electricity purchase. If you think of like a battery and how much actual energy is in there compared to the 4 cents you're spending on kilowatt hour from the electric company, it's insane. You know, that portability is really important for people, I guess. Anyway.
That it's a built-in UPS. That's what I use it a lot of times during winter
time. Oh, for laptops.
Santa Cruz, yeah.
I'm talking about like flashlight batteries, like all everyday batteries. Those things are really, really expensive. We should move over to charged batteries.
What about those flashlights where you shake them and you have a...
You look like a fool doing that. I can't handle that. I give those to my kids.
They have like a 2 lumens.
You're like, we have one of those little crank-up radio
light
ones.
Fading.
And the kids have done it so much that it just doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, you like crank it and you're like, can't get across the living room when we had the power outage last week. Anyway, pretty cool though.
The new LED flashlights are just amazing.
They are. They last forever.
They're so bright. Yeah, it's cool technology. And
kind of a geek gift, LED flashlight.
Very, very much a geek gift, yeah.
But we're not going to do that first. Sean Cleveland, please.
Actually, I'm going to add that to my geek list. The Surefire, that's the brand to get. Anyway, let's talk about Toshiba. They have designed a small micro-nuclear reactor that will fit inside an apartment building or a small city block. It will power an apartment building or small city block. It only takes up, the footprint is about 20 feet by 6 feet. It provides 200 kilowatt.
For how long?
About 40 years. It uses lithium-6 reservoirs that are connected to a vertical tube that fits into the reactor core. It's fully self-contained, automatic, designed not to overheat.
Well, but this
and it doesn't use control rods to initiate a reaction.
But this is the heat supplies. This is just the reactor core and the heat supply. It's not the rest of the infrastructure, right?
No, this is a fully self-contained micronuclear reactor.
With electrical output. Yeah, it's pretty
amazing.
Is it
being set up anywhere?
Actually, they are going to install the first reactor in Japan next year, in 2008.
They have looser rules about it. They like the Godzilla stories. They're like, nuclear radiation, no problem. Cool big monsters.
Where did that come from?
Never going to happen in the U.S., though, because we have such...
They're going to start marketing it in Europe and America in 2009.
Actually, that was kind of a loaded question. Yes, it is coming to the U.S. There's a... city in
you
Alaska, that is.
Oh, Alaska. Yeah.
Well, I was trying to feed him, but apparently he didn't do his research. I'm just...
Oh, man.
Rare!
See, earlier when you were teasing Miles, he does it on air. It's like pulls no punches. Okay, Miles, please
So I was teasing
Alaska.
Him because his parents were here, you know, good-humoredly.
Yeah.
But now he's teasing me in front of his parents. It makes him look like a jerk.
It's true. And the entire Central Coast of California. See,
yeah,
Miles.
But the thing is... I really don't care.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Okay, let's get back to geekness.
No, really, you actually heard about this in Alaska?
There's a town in Alaska that's been in talks with Toshiba for years, and they're basically looking at all their options. Mm-hmm. And when you're in the northern parts of Alaska, you have generators and like, but you have to go through a lot of kerosene, a lot of diesel fuel. And that's not good for the environment.
Right.
And so they have this back and forth on how much... what things are going to make power available at all times. Solar power doesn't work there. Wind power has too many problems with the extreme temperature differentials. So after going through the trials, they figured, okay, we'll give Toshiba the item. And the idea behind Toshiba is they're going to subsidize a lot of the cost to it so they can do a pilot project to get it working.
Right.
And for the residents of this Alaska town, they will be able to have power.
So what we're talking about is a 6 foot by 20 foot nuclear reactor that outputs electricity. Mm-hmm. And it costs a lot of money. I mean, the amount of money that it costs to actually install one is equivalent. They rate it over, I think, a 10-year period or 20-year period and then give it at a cents of kilowatt hour.
Yeah. Over 40 years, it produces electricity at only 5 cents per kilowatt hour.
Right.
So it's about half the cost of grid energy.
And it's a 200,000 kilowatt generator, yeah. So you can run a neighborhood block, mm-hmm. or more.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they're aiming for, and so we'll see how well the trials go. And they're hoping for wider production so that the cost will go down from there.
Yeah.
And no atmospheric planned pollution.
Right. There is no pollution. And it's completely sealed in that there's nothing coming out at all.
Except for when the nuclear waste is done producing
energy.
Well,
no, it's its own containment unit.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
So you install this thing really far under your block and then just after it turns off, you build another one?
No, you take it out and you...
It's done.
It's done, and then you put it where?
It uses lithium-6, it's an isotope that absorbs neutrons. It's going to give out electricity till it gives out.
That's pretty
cool. I don't think it has any...
It's going to have some waste.
It has some nuclear radioactivity to it, but it doesn't have long-lived isotopes that are...
It doesn't have the tonnage of carbon output into the atmosphere that most reactors do.
Right, it definitely has no CO2 footprint, like all nuclear reactors.
I'm just curious this... somebody's got to come and check it out, right? I mean, there's got to, maybe not a full-time employee, but there's got to be somebody in the city who's an expert.
No, part of this, part of the cost of this is staff to maintain it.
You do know how big the staff needs to be? Did they talk?
I think normal human size.
Is anyone else just disturbed by the fact that mass production and nuclear reactor are being used in the same sentence? It seems like there needs to be some sort of increased level of QA to be done.
Yeah, I think you definitely don't want this thing to mess up. But I think
it's pretty much smaller, though, that you don't have this huge, massive nuclear reactor that's so much more complex. You're simplifying it so that it can be managed by a smaller group of people.
It's a thermonuclear reactor. It's not simple. I'm sorry.
It's funny. No, I was okay with the idea until Sean said...
It's got to be, yeah.
QA.
But it's not an explosive.
No, but thermonuclear means that you're producing heat energy to create a generator. I'm assuming that's how it's working, unless they're doing something new.
I
think that's how it's working.
It is a generator, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a turbine.
Yeah,
turbine. Everything is turbines, right?
Okay. Anyway, that was a cool story. Let's not talk about this in phone call sessions. I don't want to talk about nuclear energy today. But thank you very much for thinking of calling
us. I know, it's
us.
A whole can of worms.
Yeah, we'll get into other things.
Merry Christmas.
Sean Peltier, do you have news?
No, you know, the only bit of news that's actually kind of interesting is that NEC and Sanyo Denki are actually contemplating doing water-cooled notebooks.
Really?
This is something that's been on and off the radar for the last 2 years. And I believe it actually broke in the forums earlier in the week. NEC is now actually looking at considering going to mass production with a water-cooled notebook, where basically the...
Water-cooled or liquid-cooled?
Water-cooled.
Really? Interesting.
Yep. And it's actually going to have its own coolant within the water, but it isn't, in fact, a traditional water-cooled system. The water reservoir will actually be the top of the A panel, which is actually the top of the LCD of the notebook.
Nice.
The biggest problem, obviously, is the pump. You know, trying to get some of these piezoelectronics to actually work and function and still be conscious of power is anything but trivial. But if that happens, you know, it's certainly going to see some interesting...
Will you be able to improve the performance of the water cooling by just pouring water over the computer? Will that help?
Oh, I wish, right?
Yeah, no. Such a common thing with laptops. So what you're talking about is the reservoir, the cooling vents, if you will, would be on top of the screen.
Correct.
Which makes a lot of sense. It's sticking up in the air and it's thin.
Exactly.
What do you want?
Exactly. Obviously, the biggest issue is you know, the physical footprint as well as power consumption. But if they're able to nail that down, you know, all of a sudden we might see a little bit more presence of the desktop components.
Is the pump power consumption a lot more than a micro fan that's in laptops?
No, not much. And that's really one of the advantages of using these piezoelectronics is it's come a long way. The problem is just the physical limitations of getting something to function at that size
right. And
still have a good flow rate.
Right, and then you, the other question, I guess the question I have is, would this be quiet? I mean, if there's no fans.
You still need fans.
You still need fans.
Yeah, because it'll be a radiator. So there's some point the water has to run through a finned radiator.
But couldn't the fin radiator just be on the top of the screen? You know, if you had enough fin radiator, do you really need airflow off of it?
Maybe the whole top of your computer.
I don't know.
Well, the air's got to flow through it, though.
It's a double-edged sword in source because, you know, in order to get all that surface area, now all of a sudden you're looking at a decent amount of either copper or aluminum if you're going to cut.
And that's expensive.
And the notebook gets really heavy at that point.
Exactly. Now all of a sudden you have weight, now all of a sudden you have cost.
I'm just thinking like the top of the back of the screen being kind of like an old radiator where you can put your finger across it and damage all the fins.
Yeah.
You know? So that's at the top of the laptop.
But even then it would block airflow because the screen's in front of it.
It would be on the back. It'd be exposed. See my laptop? Like,
well, and that's
not so
actually,
good.
that's part of the problem, though, is that's actually where the water reservoir is.
Oh, I see.
So you're kind of vying for the same real estate between...
Yeah, it's interesting, though, to do it. And I guess if you did that, you could be able to run your processor hotter?
Definitely. And you'd be able to run, you know, higher frequencies. You'd be able to dissipate a little bit more power. But really, this seems kind of like a brute force approach to solving the problem. I think over the course of the next year, especially in the mobile segment, you're going to see a lot of really... unique and creative solutions in terms of handling power management through dedicated, you know, unique hardware as well as some creative software solutions.
Yeah, well, especially if the new lithium batteries come out that have these microtubes. All right, cool. Thank you very much for that. Sean, you want to do another news story?
Yeah. I think it's Miles.
Is it Miles' turn?
Sure, I'll take a turn.
All right. We'll do two news stories.
The Samba group, Samba being an open source project that provides interoperability with Windows file sharing. So that Macs and Linux machines and other Unix boxes can map Windows shares and also have Windows machines map to
this is what makes it possible for your Macintosh to access your Windows drives.
Right.
Okay.
This comes from the name SMB with the protocols. They call it Samba.
Okay. But
anyway.
I thought Samba was an abbreviation. I thought SMB was an abbreviation of Samba. Samba
no,
came from
SMB was server message block, yeah.
Server message block? Oh, that's cool. Okay. So Samba.
At any rate, they've been running into some problems where Microsoft, surprise, surprise, hasn't wanted to share any information with them to make them more interoperable. Mm-hmm. In other words, to make them so they can work with different Windows machines and right. Windows servers. And to the credit of the Samba group, they've been reverse engineering for years and
they're doing
handling
pretty well.
handling fairly well. However, because of a recent judgment filed against Microsoft by the European Commission because of antitrust issues, Microsoft has finally provided documentation to the Samba group. So in the future, we'll be seeing a lot better interoperability between Windows and other machines.
I don't know if you recall, we had a caller a while ago who had issues trying to access, and I actually finally found a registration edit that you had to do to get Vista to talk to Windows or Macintosh shares. It's one of those things where, why is Microsoft making it so difficult? But maybe this litigation will make it easier for people to share.
Or at least now they're getting the docs. Although, from what I hear from the past, the docs didn't necessarily apply to the individual Windows machines. That the different Windows OSs kind of deviated from the spec sometimes.
All right. Well, let's see. Sean, do you want to do one more news story? Should we go ahead and get to some gift-giving ideas?
Oh, yeah, I like the story about the mathematicians figuring out how traffic jams happen. So they actually created an algorithm that predicts how traffic jams occur.
Well, that's kind of interesting.
So these are a team of mathematicians from the universities of Exeter, Bristol, and Budapest, and they published their findings in the Proceedings of the Royal Society. Using this mathematical formula, they have figured out why cars it's cars that slow down really quickly in heavy traffic situations.
That's the biggest cause?
That's the cause. The jam moves backwards through the traffic, creating a so-called backward traveling wave, is what they're calling it. And as, you know, the more traffic you have and the more people behind, they can actually predict how much of a traffic jam is going to occur before it frees up again.
So
through
this
algorithm.
So if I cut off someone and they slam on their brakes, that causes a giant ripple effect.
Which will create a jam. And then you get there and you realize, well, why were we going so slow? You know, it happens all the time. You wonder, so where was the accident? You know, what happened? It was actually somebody slamming on their brakes and slowing everybody down.
And possibly 4 miles ahead of the point where it actually starts going again because the wave goes behind you. Really interesting.
So the model takes into account the time delay and driver's reactions. There's a lot of interesting stuff in this article. We'll put it up on the website. People can take a look at it.
Cool. Thank you very much.
But I'm wondering how they could use this algorithm now with cars and GPS. And there's got to be some way to... We need something that ties into another data device that tells the car what's happening with traffic at any point in time.
Would public transportation count as a data device?
Public transportation?
That's how you solve a lot of traffic.
I want my GPS to come up and say, "Up, traffic jam on 85.
Yeah. Frank from
go this way.
Frank from Redwood City slammed on his brakes 4 miles ahead of you. Expect delays in 10 seconds. That kind of thing?
I don't know. Someone's going to figure it out.
All right. Pretty cool.
If you got to go to San Jose, how exactly? There's a traffic jam coming up. Oh well, I guess I better
get out and get coffee.
I can't get off of 880. I'm going to go there. So
I do it all the time.
Just get off and go for coffee.
I see a traffic jam ahead. Yeah, I get off and I know my way around.
Other routes.
Yeah, so I just take a different route. But sometimes you get stuck, and you know you come into places where you know there's not an off ramp for another mile, and all of a sudden, half a mile in, you come on a traffic jam. Wouldn't it be nice to know that ahead of time?
Yeah. Right, but if everyone has that GPS system, everybody's following your route off the freeway.
Perfect.
Yeah, but then the traffic jam clears.
Yeah, but then all the Priuses get off the road.
Not everybody.
That's perfect.
Not everybody, just the early adopters.
Just the early adopters.
And by the time that technology becomes mainstream, there's a new one that's even better.
Then we'll have the flying cars, because it'll be the future. All right, thank you very much, Sean, for that. Let's go ahead and start talking about some geek gifts. So you got a geek in your life. Hints, if you know me, I'm Lyle. I live in Santa Cruz. Just get me geek gifts. Such a bad plug. It wasn't even funny. Let's talk about the best gift ideas for geeks. Miles, what do you think the best thing? What's on your list?
What's on my list is kind of a nebulous thing. It's more like, in terms of geeks, you find a phenomenon where we say, ooh, shiny. You know, there's this neat little tidbit that catches your attention. And I have found no better place to find those than Woot.com. Like, so if I was going to recommend to people, oh, I need to get a gift for my geek friend, what do I do? Go to Woot.com, and whatever happens to be advertised at the time, usually fairly cheap, and it's going to be some novelty that you'll look at it and say, why would anybody want that? But to your geek friend, it is one of the cooler things that they have seen in at least a month.
All right, so things I've bought from Woot.com. Robotic vacuum cleaner.
Yes, yeah, so Roomba. Roombas have been
coming up all the time. Little flying devices. Little trains.
Little yeah, flying
like,
devices.
Yeah, like little remote control helicopters.
The minicopter. Yeah, I love my minicopter.
People buy cameras. There's cameras from the
whole time. Right now you have a gaming headset.
Headphones with a microphone.
Right.
It's cool. It's relatively
things
expensive.
Like that. Yeah, and they're usually.
And the thing with Woot, though, is it's not a whole shopping site. It's designed around its one page, and it has one item a day.
Right. So if you have a group of family members that want to get presents for that geek, stagger it. So one person buys on Monday, the next person buys on Tuesday. Otherwise, you're going to get the same thing.
Okay, wait a second. A headset? I mean, is that really a good gift?
For a gaming geek?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What if they already have a headset? Miles, you're not thinking this through, man. You just like Woot.com so much.
No. I was thinking along the lines of if they already have a headset, that geek is going to have one for their home and then for their office.
That's true. And then one they put in their bag so they have it in case they need
it. Right. Or they'll have something that they'll be able to say, oh, hey, my friend is coming over to play with us. Here's a spare.
Woot's not always geeky stuff. I mean, I bought for my car, for both our cars and my family, I bought a little roadside emergency kit thing, flare in it, jumper cables.
But see, that's geeky on a certain level.
Well, it's kind of cool because now we actually have a nice little bag that fits in the car.
It's the mentality of the geek. It's not necessarily the newest tech.
I hear a book coming, The Mentality of a Geek. I get that. I know what you're saying. You're right. That was kind of a geeky thing.
Across the ooh shiny aspect to it. It's
yes, the ooh shiny. One of the things they do on the site that I like a lot is they show you the statistics of buying patterns, like how many people bought at what hour the item, and how many people bought one versus two versus three.
The first hour is always impulse. It's always the highest.
Yeah, it's pretty.
And then
cool.
It goes down from there.
And then there's a whole thread you can input about whether you like this or not, and then people will go find a review of the product from some site, and they say it looks pretty good, and link to the review, so you learn about it as it goes. It's kind of like a community shopping spree about one item.
It switches over at 10 p.m. Pacific. Yeah, 10 p.m. Pacific. And for some items, you have to be there right away.
It's hard not to get the items, though. Yeah. Like they had a printer, scanner, fax machine with a camera the other day. I'm like, And Dara's like, we don't need those things.
I'm like, it's only $15. Cool.
And they take PayPal.
They take PayPal, which, if you've got some money in PayPal, you got to spend it, right? All right, thank you for that. Sean, do you want to do it?
Yeah, okay. I'm actually have a pretty controversial choice for what I think is the ideal geek gift for this holiday season. I actually think it's a PlayStation 3.
Really?
And before anyone jumps to any conclusions and says, oh, but there's no games, there's nothing for it, I truly believe it's the Swiss Army knife of all consumer electronics. Certainly when it first came out, it definitely had some lackluster reception. But thanks to a lot of firmware releases and Sony actually listening to consumers, there has been just an unbelievable amount of functionality unlocked in the device. So if you look at it, they just released DivX support. It's obviously a phenomenal AV component.
I'm kidding. They did that with their first. It's a firmware.
Correct. Yep.
So DivX support being the video codec,
video player.
Exactly. Video. And never mind the fact that it's really still to this day one of the cheapest Blu-ray players on the market.
In reviews against even the most expensive Blu-ray players, the Sony PlayStation 3 wins for quality.
So the Sony PlayStation 3 is a game console device, to tradition like an Atari game. I'm trying to get it to the basic level. It's a game playing device, and that's what it's marketed as. But it's also a media center, and that's the Swiss Army knife.
And it's highly it's hackable.
Yeah, and it's DVD player and Blu-ray DVD player. And if you've got open shares on your network with the right protocols, you can play media off your computer from the PlayStation. Of course, that's hooked up to your TV, so it's a media center.
And one of the coolest things actually is it's completely open source. You can actually install Yellow Dog Linux.
You can.
Yep. There's different SDKs for Linux installations. And actually, from an architecture standpoint, the hardware inside it is actually really cool.
Does it have an NVIDIA card in it, you guys?
It does, but actually the cool...
and potting them out and they go away.
The cool aspect of it actually is the cell processor, which unfortunately NVIDIA didn't play a major role in at all. But if you definitely have time over the holiday season...
That's a massively multi-pipeline... I think it's got 16 pipelines in the processor.
Yeah, it's actually 7 SPEs. It's a totally new paradigm to computer architecture. So if you definitely have time this holiday season, check it out. It's some cool information.
To translate a little bit of what we're talking about, the traditional Windows-type computer, the Intel processor, the same instruction set has been working for years and years and years. And so it's very backwards compatible. And because of that, there's a lot of not new design, but more like tweaking what's already existing. And this processor, the Cell processor, is a complete groundbreaking new design. It won't run Windows, of course, but it can run Linux.
Correct.
Which is kind of interesting. And the other thing is, as the player, I'll add a gift idea with that. If you have a friend that has a PlayStation 3 or a PlayStation 2 for that matter, a PSP is a great device. Now, it's a Sony personal station player, PlayStation Personal, I guess is probably what it is. And with that and a PlayStation 3, from anywhere that you have network, you can watch movies off the PlayStation 3 or sound. So you get a giant video collection, audio collection at home network. You're out at a shopping center. You want to show someone your movie that you recorded on your PlayStation 3. You can play it through your PSP. Really cool.
As long as you have Wi-Fi connectivity?
You got to have Wi-Fi connectivity for the PSP because it's not a cell phone. So you have to have Wi-Fi. But I've been really impressed.
It'll actually stream over the internet through Wi-Fi to the PSP.
Yeah,
and it looks pretty decent.
Yeah.
Yep, they call it remote play.
Yeah. And the PlayStation is making the video signal the right size for the device. So it's shrinking it, which is pretty cool.
Anyway,
you should check out Derek's. Last night I should have showed it to you.
Yeah, Derek was walking around doing it, but I didn't realize it was hooked up to his PlayStation 3.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. So PlayStation 3, pretty expensive item,
compared
right?
Compared to an iPhone, the PSP looks just really bulky and...
Yeah,
ugly.
But then again, yeah, exactly, it does. But it's a player, you know. Oh, and the PSP device is very equivalent to the first PlayStation in the hardware. So if you remember the first PlayStation, this handheld equivalent, runs the same things. You can have your games at home on your PlayStation 3 that used to play on PlayStation, and you can play them remotely. So you can load them remotely and play them.
Really
it's
cool.
Pretty impressive little setup.
And it should be noted that the PSP that you can buy on the market today is actually kind of the second generation PSP. It is slimmer. It does have better battery life, faster speeds, etc. So it's a slightly optimized form of the PSP we've all grown to know and love.
Sean, do you have a PSP or PlayStation 3?
I only have the PlayStation 3, but I think I might buy myself a gift this season.
If you're friends with Sean Peltier, it's time to pony up. Gift giving's the time of year. Okay. Sean, what's high on your list?
Into work.
Right. You know, actually, we better just do a little station business before we get into the details of Sean's list, which is quite long. GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. You're listening to GeekSpeak. We're taking your calls with gift ideas and gift discussions. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can use the internet. Just go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. Stay with KUSP for Castle Cottage this morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air rooms, Sean Peltier from NVIDIA, Sean Cleveland from NVIDIA, Miles Elam from school. Right? I don't know why I like teasing you so much. Maybe it's because your parents are here. Yay! We have an audience in the geek room today. In any case, GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. All right, Sean, what's high on your geek list?
A very expensive processor. but it's actually just amazing CPU. Intel's new Core 2 Yorkfield CPU is built on 45 nanometer architecture. They've only released the quad core version of this, so it's really expensive right now. But coming in January, you'll see really inexpensive versions of this chip, just a couple $100s.
They'll overclock. Quad core? Yeah, they'll overclock like crazy.
Oh, I've taken this 9650, 3 gigahertz chip, and mine runs at 4.3.
With a special cooling?
I have to do a little voltage increase. But, I'm actually using some nice cooling. On air, you can easily run this thing at 4 gigahertz.
Okay, so 4 gigahertz processor. What kind of motherboard do you need to be able
to... It's a 3 gigahertz normal.
Sorry, 3 gigahertz, and you can bump it up to 4. But you have to have the right motherboard that can actually do that.
There are a number of motherboards out there that support this.
With Intel chipset and NVIDIA chipset?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, both. So a lot of people are allowing even the low-end systems to actually be cranked up?
You pretty much need new chips that came out in the past month.
Yeah, it's definitely a great time to be a gamer. Right now, you really have to try hard to not find a motherboard and memory that will overclock these chips to just profound speeds. There's a lot of headroom with Intel's new process, and as a result, these chips are hitting just unbelievable speeds.
They have 12 megs of cache, L2 cache on board.
Wow.
It's just the amount of performance that you get from one of these stock chips compared to a chip at the same speed before it is 10 to 15%.
So with these chips that's on the market, if you buy an AMD processor for a geek friend, you just aren't a friend. Is that right? AMD's just out the window at this point? Intel's winning.
I would say right
down.
Now, yeah. Yeah. I could recommend AMD right now.
My unofficial opinion, with no association whatsoever to NVIDIA, would be yes, you know, definitely now's the time to be looking at Intel for anything. Yeah. Whether you're a gamer, whether you're looking at doing AV, right. You know, post processing, etc. Even the value add, you know, typically AMD has always been the most economic choice and had a pretty good price performance ratio. Yeah. Intel's right there.
But you know, to be fair, AMD's new Phenom CPU, it's not really out there yet. And it's not there at the speeds it needs to be at, I think, to be truly competitive. But it is a much more sophisticated and elegant CPU design. So from a purely engineering perspective, they really did a good job. But it's just a matter of time. I think they need to prove that they've got the performance to compete with Intel right now.
Right. Okay. Let's get to some geek gifts that are not as geeky so we don't lose everybody. I would say a good geek gift would be iPhone. Sean and Miles, you both have them. What do you think? Good gift?
I think it's an excellent gift as long as someone is willing to, if they don't have AT&T, to switch to AT&T.
Here's a phone and you have to switch your account and your monthly bill is going to go up $20 a month. Oh, happy Christmas,
well,
whatever.
It depends. If they have
If you already had a data plan, yeah. Then it doesn't go up at all.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
That's exactly why people are complaining because no one's ever had data plans before.
Right.
And, you know, being an iPhone owner myself, you know, this is the only Apple Mac component I've ever owned, currently own, et cetera. And at first, I definitely thought it was nothing more than hype. But I bought it just because I was interested in the UI. And just strictly from a UI standpoint alone, it's worth the cost of entry. Never mind the fact that you find yourself using it every minute of every day. It looks as cool. It works as cool as it looks.
Yeah, there's a backlash on the phone. That's the problem, is that Miles uses it so much that I'm starting to dislike the phone because I don't know who Miles is anymore. But it's addictive. And so my solution, I'm getting one. So that way I can be annoying too.
Yeah, but I'm just running the emails more now.
That's true. You're actually available online. We had a caller, I think, that asked to specify that website that you were talking about, Woot. Can you spell it out for us?
Woot.com, which I'll be putting up on the website.
Geekspeak.org.
Yeah, so it's WOOT.com, or you can do W00T.com.
Okay.
So oh, really? I didn't know that. Woot.
All right.
I'm going to try it.
Another geek gift. I think, Miles, what's another one on your list, or what's one on your list?
Well, being the only panelist here that isn't an employee of NVIDIA, I feel safe in saying the NVIDIA GeForce 8800 GT.
That sounds so bad.
Well, no, I'm not an NVIDIA employee, so
okay.
I'm saying, from an objective point of view,
that's amazing. It's an amazing graphics card, right?
Well, it's not the fastest that they make. It's the fact that it's ridiculously fast for how much it costs.
All right. Okay, that's great. I totally agree. Wonderful. It's basically a high-end graphics card at a low-end price, which is really impressive.
But there's also other things to it that I really like, which is, unlike the higher-end graphics cards I have, it actually fits into a single slot. That it's not one of these big, huge, you know, no offense, you guys, but these huge honking, you know, car radiator sitting in my computer blocking any access, especially if you have a small form factor PC.
Actually, those high-end cards you can get to be a single slot form factor with water cooling.
So you actually take off
that big heat sink and you put on a small water cooling
so
that takes up this.
Translating that to mere mortal, the high-end cars are only available in a car-sized radiator.
Yeah. Actually, believe it or not, there actually are a number of aftermarket vendors now that are offering right out of the box
water-cooled
or elegant cooling solutions.
Water cooling is mainstream now. Yeah. It is so easy to use.
Yeah, my grandma the other day was saying,
"Yeah,
I'm gonna rip
for
the
varying values
off
of mainstream."
but to Clevey's credit, you know, the people, the demographic that's looking at buying a $400, $500, $600 graphics card are well aware and quite familiar with water cooling. And even today, you look at mainstream companies like Dell, HP, et cetera, and they all offer high-end water-cooled solutions.
And we're not talking about rich, you know, execs who are going out and buy these expensive cards, put in their machine. They do that. But they don't mod them. These are teenagers who are doing this, you know, kids who are mowing their lawns all year and then buying all their hardware and having fun. You know, it's you see going to the chat groups. It's the kids who really do the modding. Yeah,
the ones with rich parents. But the idea behind this card, though, is that you don't have to go through all that rigmarole. You don't have to go through the water cooling in the special kit and pay $600 for a video card.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, let's get into some geek stuff that isn't so technical. No offense. I mean, I love that stuff, and that's exactly the kind of stuff that I'd want to buy. But I'm going to recommend a piece of software. It's rare for me to really like a piece of software enough to say, go spend money on it. If you're a digital photographer, who isn't nowadays? I really... Does this sound like commercial? This is NPR, this is public radio, by the way. But in any case, I love the application Lightroom from Adobe. It's a library management tool for professionals. That's what it's marketed at. I currently have in my library 40,000 photos. I can access them and look at previews on them on just my laptop, all of them. And then I connect external drives to actually be able to edit the raw and see the real file. And it's totally changed the way I look at my photos. I got to show you guys later today. So it does a really good job of managing and can handle that many photos, which is a kick. The way I'm using it is I'm keywording all my pictures, so I can go ahead and click on the Miles keyword and see all the 6,000 photos I have of Miles. That sounds bad, doesn't it? In any case, I highly recommend the application. It's too expensive really to purchase, but if you're not a professional, and that's why I think it's not being grabbed up all the time. But if you do have some disposable cash or you want to give a really good gift to a photographer, Adobe Lightroom, really great application. Next down the pipe, who's up next? Sean Peltier?
I'm gonna come out with yet another somewhat controversial choice for a gift this season.
Yeah, excellent.
I don't think the PlayStation 3 is a controversial gift. I think that's a really good gift. You're just saying that the Xbox outperforms some things or has more games. Yeah.
There's definitely been a stigma.
The Wii everybody loves.
Exactly.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
Also, as long as you only want to buy half the movies that are out there, the new high definition movies that are out there.
Oh, right.
Well, for this is actually going to be catered more towards the kind of, on the fence geek, so to speak.
Okay.
It actually is going to involve some physical activity, so stay tuned. This is actually the Nike Plus. Now, the cool thing with this is you actually pair it with an iPod Nano. And what it is it's a receiver that has 2.5 gigahertz communication. It's completely proprietary protocol to Nike. And what it will do is it will sync up, and as you're running, it will report back the distance you traveled, et cetera. But the really cool thing is it actually coaches you through, and it will congratulate you as you're reaching a personal best. It'll be able to output all sorts of different information, pace, et cetera. And on top of it, obviously, it syncs up with the iPod, so you're able to stream through your entire music collection, et cetera.
And you can put your graphs online through the Nike site, and then you can actually use those graphs on your personal website.
Exactly.
See what your run stats are.
And compete with people.
Yeah, Nike Plus was actually on my list, too. I think it's a great little... What is it called? iPod Nike Plus? Nike Plus?
Nike Plus is the official name. They're typically referred to as Nike Plus iPod.
And this is the iPod Nike shoe thing that came out a while ago. It was just a shoe, and then people start purchasing the little puck things themselves.
Correct.
You can put it in any shoe. I love it too. It started me running and then injured myself, unfortunately. But I went ahead because I liked it so much. I bought one for my wife as well. They're not that expensive. And now up at my job, we're actually hacking them and using them for other things like music modification. One of my students is really interested in producing a installation piece where he uses multiple of these sensors, and it's pretty cool. Wow. Pretty cool stuff.
So we can get off the whole iPod subject. I almost wanted an iPod Touch. That's the iPhone without the phone capabilities.
Yeah.
But I just learned that it doesn't have a speaker.
No, because you have to wear headphones.
Yeah, but that's kind of the cool part about the iPhone is you can watch videos and share them with people.
Oh, that's a good point.
And it's
the Touch
amazing.
Does not have a speaker at all?
No.
Yours has a speaker though, right, Miles?
Right, my phone.
Right, because it's got a ringer.
So we had a friend over, and she had an iPhone, and we all have two-year-olds, and they were all on the floor around this iPhone. It was iPhone,
right?
And her daughter knew how to navigate the iPhone. She could go anywhere you asked her to. A two-year-old. That's how good the interface is on this. A two-year-old can use it. And we were just watching them play, and then she said, "Yeah, too bad that the iTouch doesn't have a speaker." I'm like, what? So when they do that, I think it's a good buy. And they should add more memory because 16 gigs is just not enough.
Yeah, there are add-ons where you can plug into the bottom of the iPod Touch to have a speaker, and it's only a couple centimeters.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
Long.
Now, is 8 gigs enough for you, though, for your iPhone?
It has been for me so far.
You haven't had a problem with that?
Yeah, this is one area of contention that you'll always find between, iPod users and everyone else is everyone always trying to vie and say, oh, well, I can't fit my entire MP3 collection on. you know, at no point in time do I need to browse through 15,000 songs. You know, I think 2,000 songs is ample. And so far, I haven't had any limitations in terms of keeping videos, pictures, right, et cetera.
Resyncing for what I need at the time is perfectly acceptable to me, because 8 gigs is more than enough music to last,
But this is a really cool video device. I'm not worried about music. 8 gigs is plenty for that. I'm worried about going on a trip somewhere and loading up a bunch of TV shows and movies, you know. How many movies? How much space does a movie take up?
It's about a gig per movie. Yeah. Maybe more, maybe less.
Okay.
So, you know, 7 movies.
Okay.
Plus the operating system.
I'm having a lot of network problems on my computer. I'm not sure why, but one of the things we did is we missed a call from Annan, who finally gave up. But Annan from Live Oak, thank you so much for calling. Sorry that I didn't get you in. I will get other calls in if you'd like to call us with questions and comments. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Let me give it out nice and slow again. In the 831 area code, that's 476-2800. And toll free, 1-800-655-5877.
I think Rick, he said Anon had a suggestion about geeky people giving a gift of their services to non-geeks.
Yeah. I saw that too. That's what Anon suggested is, yeah, if instead of giving a gift to a non-geek, go ahead and give them an hour of geek service as like a you know, time in your office. But I also highly recommend, which of course any family members of geeks, you get it anyway to some degree. But this way, you don't have to feel guilty about asking them. You don't have to cook them dinner. So yeah, if you're a geek, go ahead and give a gift a couple hours of service. And also, here's another recommendation.
That's a good point. So if a geek gives you services, make sure you give the geek nutrition, because they're always malnutrition.
That's a good point.
I don't know. Some geeks are overly nourished.
That's true, too.
I also want to recommend something. Go ahead, when you visit your family, you geeks out there, when you visit your family this holiday season, go ahead and install Firefox for them. Give updates to their Windows or Macintosh systems. Get their computer up to speed. It takes you 3 hours or something like that. They can't do it, or they're not going to do it.
That's a good point.
And go ahead and make their default browser Firefox and load in their bookmarks. And then later, they're not going to get as much viruses that you're going to have to fix at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, so it behooves you to set up your family to some degree and make them a little cleaner.
You know, something you can do is go to Start and Run and type in msconfig. And that'll bring up a little window that allows you if you go to the startup tab of msconfig, you can see what's loading with Windows. And I guarantee most people have 20, 30 items that are loading.
Yeah.
And they're wondering, why is my computer getting so slow? Why does it take so long to boot? Because all that stuff is loading. So you got to be careful you can get rid of all. You don't have to load any of that. But be aware that sometimes they have calendars with people's birthdays. They want that to load for reminders.
Yeah.
So ask them about everything that's being run, and you'd be surprised to get rid of some of that stuff, and it speeds the system up.
It's like a geek cleansing. That's the gift you should give them. I'll give you a 2-hour geek cleansing anytime you want. But yeah, I agree. I think that a knowledgeable mind sitting in front of a computer making it better is a wonderful thing. Let's go ahead and go to Salinas. Oh, wait a second. Maybe not.
Yeah. Ren.
Yeah, okay, I see. Yeah, that is Salinas. Okay, good. Red, hello, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, thank you. I'm looking for something for my 6-year-old grandson who's geek. What do I buy him?
6-year-old grandson?
Yes.
The mini helicopters, Lyle, are phenomenal.
What would you buy Lyle? He's 6.
Right, Wyatt?
Or Wyatt, excuse me.
Yeah, I've got a 6-year-old boy. Guns? No, that's what he wants.
That's what he wants. But he's never going to get those.
But the thing is, he's listening to the show right now. Okay, Daria, turn off the radio so Wyatt doesn't know. Okay.
Okay.
Turn off the radio. And here's what I'm getting for Wyatt. Yeah, I did get him a dartboard. So he really loves darts, right? And I told Daria I got him a dartboard. And gosh, I hope he's not listening right now. And and Daria freaked out, of course, because the 6-year-old should not have darts. So the dartboard that I got him was a magnetic dartboard, little magnets. Works really well. He gets to play the game, and he can't, you know, stab the cat in the eye, which is a really good combination. So I think a little magnetic dartboard's a great
great
toy.
Yeah, that is pretty cool, yeah.
And I recommend that, and you can get them at game stores. I got mine at Game-A-Lot in Santa Cruz. I think that's the game store.
I think Legos are always a great way to go.
Lovely. Yeah, Legos are wonderful.
Because it really works with hand-eye coordination. They can do anything they want. And if you get something themed, there are a lot of themed Lego kits. They can use parts from one theme to another. And
you know, if you had enough time, I'd highly recommend going to the Lego site and going and buying one block, one color of one block. You know, like a 2x2x4 block of Lego, all at one color, and buy like 1,000 of them. It's going to set you back, I don't know, $20 or $30, something like that. But the idea of having just one thing makes the imagination you have to create the things a lot more. Like when I was a kid, they only had like blocks, and now they got all these weird WASI things that frustrate the heck out of me. But yeah, I think you're right. Construction type toys. It's a great one.
Thank you.
Certainly, certainly. Thanks for calling. Man, if I just ruin Christmas for my son, I'll never forgive myself. Well, yeah, I will. Okay, line two from Big Sur. Mangus?
Magnus,
welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey. I'm calling from Big Sur, and I'm sitting by my computer, and I just spontaneously called you because I'm trying to import images to my Aperture application on a Mac.
Yes, it's Lightroom application management, photo management.
Right. Is that okay?
So what's the import problem?
I have an extension on the files called BMP, which is a Word bitmap something. Yeah.
Yep.
And if I change that extension, or if I, you know, I go into get info and I change it to open with Adobe Photoshop, it opens fine. And if I change the extension manually to TIFF, it imports fine. But as long as it has BMP extension, it doesn't import. So my question is there a way without complicated scripting that I can
change all the names?
Globally change.
And you're on a Macintosh?
Yeah.
There's an application called Name Changer. First off, if you're running OS X, you can make a Automator script, which isn't that difficult to do inside applications, I think utilities. There's an application called Automator.
Right.
And it's basically a little scripting language, but it will rename things for you. You can use that. I've downloaded a tool, and I do not remember the name of it, but it's basically a mass renamer. I think it might be called Mass Renamer. Yeah, I'm not sure the name of it, actually. That's not it. Any case, an automated script will do it.
Okay.
You're basically going to kind of create a little scripting thing that does the name change. The thing that's strange about this is it doesn't seem to make sense. A bitmap is not a TIFF, if I'm correct. Miles, the format of bitmap and TIFF, totally different things, right?
TIFF is an envelope for it, whereas bitmap is the actual file format. So a TIFF could have a bitmap encoding inside of it.
So if you had a TIFF reading engine, it actually might have bitmap support?
It probably does, actually.
Okay, and that's the trick that's happening. That's clever.
There's no question. If I actually manually change from BMP to .TIFF, it suddenly becomes a TIFF and it imports fine.
That is surprising, but I'm glad it works for you.
Yeah.
They're both uncompressed formats for the most part.
TIFF is...
It's pretty big format.
We'll talk about this off air.
Yeah. Of course, all of these have been gone over an evolution. So there's many different flavors of each of these formats now, yeah.
So you think that if I go into the script editor, I can find the application to create that script and do it myself, yeah?
Yeah, you definitely can.
You could probably do a search on Google and find somebody who's done a script for you to walk you through how this works. That's what I would check first.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
All right, and I found a good one. I found an application, and does it cost? Oh, it costs money, darn it. Yeah, a little Google searching, I think you're going to find one that does this, and I think that's a really good solution to trick Adobe products to open it correctly.
Okay, what would be the good search term?
Make sure just do OS space 10, and so or X, excuse me, OS space X, and then renamer, I think would probably be a good one. You might want to add the word free in there. Apple has a great way of managing applications that are downloadable and stuff from their site. So you go to apple.com, and then you go to downloads. They're going to list a whole bunch of different applications in different groups. Probably utilities is what you're going to be looking for. There's probably one in there.
Okay.
So and also, looking through that's always fun because you'll find other little applications you didn't know you needed, and then you're going to download those too.
Okay.
Mangus, thanks so much for the call.
Sorry to disrupt your Christmas gift party.
No, not at all. Thank you so much for calling.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you, bye-bye.
You know, good stocking stuffer for geeks is just a little toolkit. Little pliers, screwdriver.
There's nothing wrong with more tools.
Yeah.
You know, I have a static thing on my Amazon wish list, which is wood clamps, different sizes of wood clamps. Yeah. I do wood projects, and you can never have enough clamps. It's kind of like that with magnetic screwdrivers with lights in them. That's a great tool.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You keep on leaving them at my house. I love them. My kids find them. They drain the batteries, and then they're not as great. But.
Something else, the DVD burners with light scribe technology. You can buy these things external now. They connect through USB or FireWire. But it's really neat technology that you burn your data on one side and then you flip the disk over using the same laser. You can burn images on the backside.
Instead of writing on them, you can actually do graphics and stuff.
So go to lightscribe.org to learn more about it. But personally, I wouldn't buy a drive without LightScribe because I use it all the time.
And, well, speaking of LightScribe, why don't you tell us about your LightScribe optical that you drive that you'd like for
Yeah, this is what I would, like this, actually. And the price has come down. It's not that bad. I think it's in the $300 range now. But LG just came out with a Blu-ray burner. This is an internal drive for a PC.
Or a Tower Macintosh.
It might, it'd probably fit into Mac because it's a serial ATA interface.
Mm-hmm.
So it burns Blu-rays at 6X, reads them at 6X, and it also reads HD DVD at 3X, and burns and reads DVDs at 16X.
Okay, so it's a Blu-ray burner, HD reader, and DVD and CD burner.
Yes.
All in one package.
All in one
package. Does everything.
With LightScribe.
With LightScribe, which means you can turn the disc over and print images into it.
Yeah.
That's
so,
cool.
So I wouldn't use the Blu-ray burning capabilities for movies. I would use it for data because you can burn, you know, you're talking 30 gigs
yeah.
of data on, that's pretty good on a double, on dual-sided disc.
It's next week's Geek Speak, we're going to talk about the technology of the year that we liked. Of course, this GIF stuff is a little bit like that, so we're going to have some similarities next week's show. But one of the things that got me when you say this that you're interested in this is last year for your birthday, which is in January, I tried to get people together to buy you a Blu-ray burner.
Really?
Blu-ray PC burner, and I think it cost
$1,000.
And that's 1 year, and now it's down to $300.
And that was a first-gen drive.
And it didn't do HD.
Yeah.
So now we have a multi-format $300 device that does everything. There's more than what $1,000 device a year ago would have cost.
I think this is a third-gen drive in 1 year.
Man, that's amazing. It's amazing how technology flies. But then again, we're geeks, so we like that kind of thing. You're listening to Geek Speak. Stay tuned in just a little while for Castle Cottage. Let's go ahead and do one more little bit. And I think, who else wants a gift? Geek gift? Another good one. Miles, you got another good geek gift? What do you want your parents to get you this year?
Wait, here's one that's this hasn't been mentioned yet. This is from Sean's list, actually, which is a USB turntable. Folks have a bunch of vinyl. Being able to hook up through a USB cable to your computer and being able to convert that vinyl to a WAV file or to MP3.
Wait, so it's a full turntable?
Yes.
With a USB cable?
Yes.
Yeah, that's really cool. How much does it cost?
It's about $100.
Yeah, it's $99.99.
That
and it is
a
mini
gift.
Turntable with a USB in it.
And that's all. Does it have audio out, too, so you can actually use it to play music?
Well, I think that's the idea, is that you're not hooking up to a phono jack and having to deal with that loss in there. You're doing USB, so it's a direct connection to your computer for a recording and conversion.
Yeah, yeah.
It's professional quality turntable. It's got really cool styling. It's really neat.
And for all of you Castle Cottage lovers, Susan Freeman's behind me and says, I want one. So there's a little hint.
And it's plug-and-play USB compatibility with both Windows XP, 2000 Vista, and Mac OS X.
You know, that is a great gift because so many people have this great collection of vinyl. They stopped using it. You get a device like that, all of a sudden you're using it again. You put it into your MP3 player, you're set.
Yeah.
Okay,
and
I love
you have
it.
The vinyl for collection, but do you still be able to listen to the music without having a needle wear into it or have to get a laser-guided needle or something like that?
And I bet it comes with software to get rid of pops and scratches, which most
Which is Audacity, although it's free software.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's great. Really wonderful. All right, cool. USB turntable. All right.
It is. Audacity software is included.
Woo! Free software included. Audacity's pretty good.
I didn't
good.
Know Audacity was buggy. Free. Interesting.
Yeah, Audacity's
It
free.
Is.
But it's a little buggy. GeekSpeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You know, I wish that, to some degree, I wish that I'd found out about that a month ago and bought four and then resold some for twice as much to friends and paid for them. I mean, that's such a great product, USB turntable. Anyway, the geeks this morning were Sean Cleveland, Sean Peltier, and Miles Elam. Thank you, geeks, for being here today with us.
Thank you.
Pleasure to be here.
I'm Lyle Troxell. Of course, GeekSpeak has registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. Broadcasting HD radio on 88.9 FM, this is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, KBDH, San Ardo, streaming live and podcasting at kusp.org. For KUSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. We'll see you next week and have a pleasant holiday season. You just listened to another episode of GeekSpeak via our podcast. Would you do us a favor? Please go to your favorite podcasting index site, whether it be iTunes, Dig.com, Odeo, or another site, and write a review or give us a vote to let others know what you think about GeekSpeak. Thanks, that'd really help us out. GeekSpeak is supported by PreownedCar.com, PreownedCar.com, where anyone can post their vehicle for sale or browse to purchase a pre-owned car from other car owners. More information available at PreownedCar.com. This is Lyle Troxell for KUSP. Thanks for listening.